I've made some references over the last several weeks that we were going to talk about slavery in biblical times, and so that's what we're going to do tonight. That's the subject we're addressing tonight, and I think this is going to take me a couple of lessons to do this, so I want to make sure we cover, and so we'll talk about why this is important in just a moment. Ray, can you lead us in a prayer as we start?
Heavenly Father, thank you that we can be here tonight in this place, and thank you for Philip and the preparation he's made, and this material that's already been beneficial to us, and help us again tonight to be benefited by it. Thank you for our church here, opportunity you give us, Lord, to worship you, and the appeal that you make to all mankind, and the role we have in helping to spread your word. Bless us in that effort, and bless us now as we go through this hour. We ask in Jesus' name. Amen.
So, in the study of the world of the New Testament, the backdrop of this whole endeavor is to consider how that our world is very different than the New Testament world, but also how that the New Testament world is a lot like our world. That things are unique to the New Testament, but there are some things that are not. And one significant area of difference, and I would even put it as tension, is slavery. So when you read the Bible, you see slavery. And one of the reasons I wanted to spend quite a bit of time on this is because there are a lot of questions that people have today trying to understand how biblical times and biblical teaching fits into slavery. So when I describe it as tension, when you encounter slavery, why is there tension when it comes to the biblical world and our world over slavery? What are some areas that create the tension?
Well, people generally in our country think of slavery as racist.
Okay. All right. In our experience, racism and slavery are synonymous. We're going to learn tonight that that's not the case in the ancient world. Right there's one point of tension. What else? I mean, we don't quite have anything like slavery in our culture, right? It's very foreign. There are some things that we encounter in the biblical world that are like our world, but this is one where there's a big difference there, big disconnect. And so that's it's a big learning curve for us to understand it. And there are a lot of sensitivities about human rights in our culture. But I tell you, you can't stop just at slavery when it comes to that subject in the Bible, because ancient times had a different slate of standards when it came to human rights. And that's every society in ancient times. How is sometimes the fact that slavery exists in the Bible and even commented on regarding how people are to behave within slavery, how is that sometimes used against the Bible? Yeah, Becca?
If Christians owned slaves, how could they possibly be good people?
Okay. So if when they see slavery in the Bible, there's an assumption that every kind of slavery and every manifestation of it is endorsed by the Bible. And so how can you endorse slavery? That's an obvious evil. And it undercuts the moral authority of the Bible in some people's minds. Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Becca, because that's exactly what happens. And you do see Christians being taught how to deal with their slaves. And so, hey, what's the problem there? That's an inherent evil. We've got to do some heavy lifting to understand this. There are evil things about slavery, but there are a lot of evil things about a lot of things. And that's part of this world we live in. So I want to take a couple of weeks because I think it will help us to understand a lot in the scriptures, Old and New Testament, but also this is where there's tension about the Bible and contemporary values, and I want to address those. And so what we've got to do tonight is really lay the groundwork and then sort of dive into those issues next week. So to understand slavery, we got to do some work in the biblical world. So I want you to first of all understand this point, and that is that slavery was pervasive. It's just everywhere in the ancient world. Consider the statement in Genesis 37. Turn over there, and we're going to read this. Rachel, I'm going to have you read that, verse 25 and 26. This is the occasion when Joseph's brothers, out of envy, see him coming to check on them, and they plot to kill him at first, and then they throw him into a pit, and they decide to take a different tact. Why just do away with him when we can do away with him and make money on him? So how would you like to have brothers like that? 25 and 26, Rachel, can you read that?
Then they sat down to eat a meal, and as they raised their eyes and looked, behold, a caravan of Ishmaelites was coming from Gilead with their camels bearing aromatic gum and balm and myrrh and on their way to bring them down to Egypt. And Judah said to his brothers, what profit is it for us to kill our brother and cover up his blood?
All right. So they decide to sell him to the Ishmaelite traders who take him into Egypt, and I'm assuming you know the rest of the story. He ends up a slave in Egypt. Now, the question is this. Is this just a sort of rare perchance event that some people are passing by and they're willing to buy Joseph and to sell him into slavery? Or is this indicative of the fact that there's a lot of trading going around. There are trading caravans coming down through this area into Egypt. And it was a common thing to sell someone to traders. It's the second one. The fact that they saw this caravan going down to Egypt and they thought of this meant that this was commonplace. And that's just one of many instances in the scriptures where, and I'm going to use a word, I don't like using words like this, and I try to find another one, but this word just works. And that's the word ubiquitous. Slavery is ubiquitous. It's everywhere. Every rock you look under, it's there. We have references. This is not the first reference to slavery in Genesis. Genesis chapter 21 talks about Abraham, Sarah, and the handmaid, as some translations put it, some translations call her slave or servant, and some translations call her a bondwoman. But Hagar was a slave in the household of Sarah and Abraham. And so you just find it just in the opening pages of the Bible. So that's the first thing I want you to see. Every civilization you see, the first civilizations you see, and all the way down to the Greeks and Romans, where we're going to spend a lot of our time, you see slavery. And when you encounter the literature, there's no analysis in the literature of whether this is a good thing or a bad thing. Nobody's debating the merits versus the drawbacks to slavery. Nobody's doing that. There's no controversy about it for the most part. You see it in Mesopotamia. You see it in Egypt. You see it in India. You see it in China, though China had probably less slavery than any ancient culture. It's just everywhere. Matter of fact, I would be suspicious of the Bible if you didn't see constant references to slavery, because it wouldn't match the world at the time. I would be suspicious of this literature if there are not frequent references to slavery. I'd be suspicious of it if it didn't talk about slavery. Because all other ancient literature talks about slavery as if it's just a fact of life, just like the sun rises and sets every day. It's just the reality. And I think that's a very important thing to understand. And one of the reasons why there is tension with modern people in the Bible over slavery is because slavery is not common to us. And it's so unusual and strange, but it wasn't the case in the ancient world. So let's talk a little bit about ancient slavery in general. And, you know, to describe ancient times with a list of generalities is a very risky thing. It's too general to be accurate, but this is one category, oddly enough. This is a subject that you can generalize about ancient times and identify a lot of general truths about this subject. So, first of all, why were people enslaved? This is generally a list in the order of the most common reasons why you'd be a slave. There might be an exception to this, but probably the most common reason is going to be especially the case with the Romans. We'll talk about that later. Is because of war. And you don't just slaughter everybody in a war. Oftentimes, you would capture other people and turn them into slaves. You see a lot of that in the Old Testament. You see that with Israel and Assyria and other examples. Remember the Israelite girl who was a servant to Naaman who had the leprosy? And then sends him, recommends that he goes back and sees the prophet in Israel. She was a war captive. And so this was a common way in which people became a slave. Also, economic hardship. In some places and sometimes, this is probably the number one reason. So you can't feed yourself. You can't feed your family. Maybe you incur a lot of debt. And so either you are sold into slavery or a child is sold into slavery. How would you like that for leverage as a parent? Okay? That'd be the ultimate leverage, right? Okay. So it did happen. And life is pretty cheap in ancient times. Also, people were enslaved because they had committed some societal offense. They committed some crime, and that was their punishment. They were turned into slaves. Sometimes a person's a slave merely because of who their mother and father were. This varied. Sometimes if your mother was a slave, you were a slave, regardless of your father, free or slave. In some cases, both parents had to be. In some cases, it's pretty rare, if your parents were slaves, it didn't mean automatically you were a slave. It just depends on the culture and the time. But birth would be another reason. And then we'll talk more about piracy later with the Romans. Piracy and kidnapping. Always been pirates everywhere. They're attacking ships, taking stuff, and oftentimes they take people and they sell them, especially because you're on the, you know, the waters, you can go to another port and sell someone far away from their home, or just kidnapping in general. Again, we're laying a lot of groundwork this week, and next week I'm going to come back and dive into a lot of passages. There is actually, did you know that there is a passage in the New Testament that condemns kidnapping, and in most translations, it's man catcher. In other words, the New Testament does condemn catching people and selling them into slavery. It condemns that. Now, how do you reconcile that with the instructions about, you know, masters treating slaves a certain way and things like that? We'll talk about that next week. It's another reason why somebody was kidnapped. Did you know that Julius Caesar was seized by pirates when he was on a vessel? And he was enslaved for a while, not very long. And he got loose, he comes back, and he captures them all and slits their throats and has them crucified. So anybody of any status, and this is when he was a young general, anybody of any status could be kidnapped by pirates or kidnapped on the land, either one. How were slaves treated? Every kind of way, depending on the culture, depending on local regulations, depends on local traditions, depends on master to master. Some places they were treated, you know, listen, it's never a good experience. But there's bad and there's worse. You got it? It's never a good experience, but there's bad and there's worse. And in some cases, they were treated more harshly than others. And it's so common, it's so pervasive, that even people of reasonable means, not anybody that would be considered wealthy, sometimes would have a slave or two or three. And so that's why you find all these servants in people's houses, and they don't really appear to be that wealthy, but they had servants, and sometimes they were bond servants or they were slaves. And so definitely wealthy people had slaves. Wealthy people piled up slaves, just like wealthy people pile up cars and homes and diamond rings. They piled up slaves. It was a badge of their status. And oftentimes they have large operations like plantations, large farming operations, they would need them. Generally, most slaves worked in just general labor like agriculture, mining, moving, carrying loads, housework. However, some slaves were specialized in their work. They were artisans. We'll see some other examples of that in a moment. That's really true whether you're talking about, you know, Mesopotamia in the days of Abraham, or Egypt in the days of Joseph, or you're talking about Israel and Assyria and Babylon, etc. All these ancient civilizations that you encounter in the Bible, these would be true regarding them and slavery. Who was enslaved? Well, actually, that list right there, reasons for captives, a reason for enslavement, war captives, economic hardship, punishment for crime, etc., kidnapping, that tells you something about who they're enslaving. And the one thing I want you to really take away from this is that it's not race-based slavery in a strict sense. The American experience taints us when it comes to that, but racism and slavery really were not connected through most of history. We're going to elaborate on this when we get to the Romans and so forth. Now, people viewed slaves as inferior. People do it in our culture with people of the same race. Yeah, I work for this company. Yeah, so-and-so said he's only doing this job. There's no way he can handle being a mid-manager. You know, he's got a team of four people. That's about all he can handle. There's no way he could be a mid-manager in this company. And what we're saying is that individual is just not cut out for something with more responsibility and requires more talent or whatever. And that could be a true assessment or it can be a prejudice assessment. And that's how people looked at slaves. They said, you know, they're really inferior. That's all they can do. They're doing the best they can do. But it was not that they were inferior because they were of a certain race, but rather they're slaves, thus they're inferior. See the difference there? So skin color virtually was no factor in this. No factor at all. You see light-complected people enslaving dark-complected people. You see darker-complected people enslaving lighter-complected people. It's all mixed up. And I don't have this in my notes, so I'm going to throw this out. It's free of charge. In Roman markets, we'll get to the Romans in a moment, the Romans were pulling a lot of slaves out of what we know as Europe today, places like what we would call Germany and France and Poland, those areas, and a lot of those people were very white, okay, very white, like my ancestors. And the Romans were Mediterranean people, so they're olive-skinned people. And the ones they pulled down from Europe, it was actually one of the leaders came through the market and saw some of these Germanic young slaves being sold. And he referred to them as like Anglos, which is Latin for angels. They're like glowing. They're so white. You're so white, you glow. From which we get our term Anglo, as in Anglo-Saxon. So it was actually Anglos being enslaved by darker complected people. Do you see the complexity of that? And you see this literature in the 18th and 19th century of how white people are so superior and they've never been enslaved and black people have always been enslaved. Ha, ha, ha. That's just not historic. Not at all. It's just not true. So it's a very complicated thing. Over time, and that's the point I'm making, groups were enslaved. Then you come down 300 years later and they're the ones doing the enslaving. And that's what humans do, by the way. Humans will look for every opportunity to leverage other humans. And we'll mention in a moment how that, especially with the Greeks and even more so with the Romans, you could get your freedom. It was very common that if a slave got his freedom and then he actually got some means, he would later on turn around and go and buy slaves. That's what humans do. So, that's what doesn't change. How humans treat each other. Okay, any questions so far on the generality of ancient slavery before we talk about the Greeks and the Romans? I know a lot of this is a lecture-based class, but good pause here for a question, too. Andrew.
So, let's take I'm going to ask if this is a rare thing. Sparta, their culture. You had nobles at the top. You had everybody else that was virtually slaves, if not, that they kept oppressed by their military culture.
Right, the Hellenes.
Was that widespread, or was that kind of an isolated case?
Okay, we're going to talk about the Greeks right here. The Spartans probably had a little bit more oppressive system than some other Greeks. So the Helots were the ones you're talking about that were the slaves. And it was a very systematic arrangement, and it was pretty oppressive. Probably a little bit more so. But everything was more extreme with the Spartans. Everything was. How they raised their kids was extreme. I mean, if your kid's 8 years old and still with their mom, they're a wimp. I mean, that's really how it went with the Spartans. So it is extreme. Again, you got to look at context. Okay, Spartans were hard on their slaves. Yeah, they were hard on everybody.
One Greek philosopher that ate the soldiers' food said, "No wonder they wanted to die."
Yeah. Very extreme culture in every way. So let's talk about the Greeks and the reason why, as we've seen in this class. Greek culture has a lot of bearing on the New Testament world. Huge bearing on the New Testament world. The Greeks. Greeks loved their slaves. It's hard to know numbers, but it's safe to say that a larger number of slaves, that the Greeks had a larger number of slaves than most ancient societies. They leaned on slavery more than most ancient societies. What's a little counterintuitive to us about that in the Greeks? We Westerners, even Americans, look on the Greeks as what? Very wise, sophisticated, advanced, and they were. So were the Romans. And of all ancient people, the Greeks and the Romans probably had more slaves than anybody. They leaned on them more than anybody. So see what we're getting into here? That the Greco-Roman world was a very slave-oriented system. And we have all these references in the Bible and all these spiritual references about slavery in the New Testament in a spiritual sense. Like Romans 6 talking about being enslaved to sin. And now we're free through being buried with Christ. So, we've talked about how that it's not race-based. However, the Greeks did have a way of looking at things. We've talked about this, how that the Greeks called basically everybody who's not a Greek a barbarian. And Greek's a very generic term. They had a lot of differences among themselves. So barbarians means basically non-Greeks, but especially those northward up in Europe. So what we know is Eastern Europe today and Germany, those were the barbar people. We don't understand them. They just go barbar, yakety yak. We don't understand what they're saying. They're very uncouth. They're not as developed and sophisticated as we are. And so they believed that the barbarians were fit for slavery. And so they did think that. The Greeks saw slaves as property, and the property could be punished at will. You could beat a slave, you could chain a slave, you can even kill a slave. You begin to see in certain cultures certain regulations on what you could do to a slave. The Greeks basically had none. Slaves could get their freedom in Greek society. It was not easy, but they could get it. It did happen. And we'll talk a little bit about that, you know, how that happens in just a moment when we talk about the Romans. But if you became a free person among the Greeks, you were never accepted as a citizen. So you didn't have the rights in that local polis to participate in the government and things such as that, serve in the military, etc. So you always stayed a second class status, kept a second class status. Even if you were free. There were a lot of reasons why somebody would free a slave. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll talk about the Romans. Okay, that's just really quick on the Greeks, because a lot of this is true of the Romans too, but the Romans had some unique things I want us to get to. So the Romans. Let's talk about the Romans here. They had the same general basis for enslavement, but slavery blew up with the Romans. There are two times in human history when slavery expands on a massive scale. In most times, in most societies, slavery was just part of the fabric, just blended in with everything else. There are two times in human history when slavery was blown up to massive proportions. And anybody visiting from some other time and place would say, wow, y'all have a lot of slaves. Wow, you've got slaves everywhere. Two times in human history. One, the Romans. Both during the Republic years, toward the end of the Republic years when they're conquering, and through the Roman Empire. So we're talking about New Testament times. The New Testament times saw one of the largest expansion of slavery ever in human history. Anybody want to guess the other time? Yes. We're going to talk about some Jewish slaves in a moment. The Americas. Somebody say that?
No.
Okay. The Americas. When millions of Africans were brought across the Atlantic, and it proliferated in Central, South, and eventually North America. It's the other time. It's massive scale. Massive scale. So, very interesting. So, why were people slaves? Why did it grow so much in the Roman period? Still, economic hardship, born to a slave, maybe punished because of some crime. But two other things. Piracy in the early years of the Republic. Talking before Julius Caesar, definitely before Augustus. Piracy was rampant on the Mediterranean. And one thing that the pirates did was they kidnapped people. I mentioned Julius Caesar earlier. And they would sell them in various ports. And so you could be a wealthy person and be seized on a vessel. You could have like all this land back where you're from. Your family could be one of the leading families of that community. And you could be seized on the Mediterranean, taken 100, 200 miles away to some port, dropped off and sold, and nobody ever heard from you again. You just got flushed down the toilet, so to speak. And so this became a problem for the Romans. It first supplied them with a lot of slaves. Then it became a problem, and they decided to crack down on it because the piracy was not so much the kidnapping, it was disrupting the trade. And so in a few decades before Augustus, about a century before the birth of Jesus, the Romans really cracked down on piracy. The Roman Senate gave some commanders just carte blanche. And they went through and they wiped out these pirates. They just cleaned up the Mediterranean. There was still a little bit of it, but it was never a big problem. The biggest reason why slavery expanded during the Roman period was because of the Roman conquest. They were war captives. Okay? And when Rome started expanding, this is about 200 years before Jesus. When Rome started expanding over into North Africa and over toward Greece and over into Asia Minor, what we call Turkey today, two things happened. The labor pool got drained at home. I have this up there. Yeah. The legions drained the labor pool. So there was a need for workers. Think about it. What happened in the Second World War in America when a lot of men went and fought or got in the military? What happened in the factories and farms? Women started working jobs they never worked before because there was a labor shortage. There was a need there. So the legions drained the labor pool. So they were looking for laborers. Well, the legions also provided labor because the conquests, war captives, the wars would fuel an increase in the use of slavery as well as an increase in a source of slavery. And so the slave population just blew up in the Roman Republic. And it became big business. big business, because Roman commanders had a lot of latitude out in the field. And Roman commanders could decide whether to slaughter people or capture them and sell them. And guess who got a cut of the sale? The Roman commander. And the Roman government benefited too, because sometimes these slaves would be shipped back to work for the government. So just to give you an idea, this is from a great book about slavery by Milton Meltzer. He says that the Roman governor Paulus in 229 sold 150,000 captives from northwestern Greece. 150,000. Scipio sold 50,000 Carthaginians. That's during the Punic Wars. They went over and fought in Africa against Carthage. Marius, fighting up among the Germans, took 90,000 Teutons and 60,000 Cambri captive in 102 BC. Julius Caesar, he cut his teeth warfare up in Gaul, which is what we call France today. In one town, he took 53,000 captives. In over a nine-year period of his campaigns up in Gaul, over a nine-year period, it's estimated he took 500,000. That's a 500,000 people he captured and sold into slavery. So it's just mind-boggling. Now, speaking of Jews, remember we referenced lately, well, even my sermon Sunday, and I was talking about Jesus mourning over Jerusalem and prophesying that what would happen because they rejected him. What was going to happen in Jerusalem? Going to be destroyed. And what happens in AD 70, the Romans come in and they level it. That was called the Jewish Wars. They start really up in Galilee. And in that period of the Jewish Wars, this is around 68, 69, 70 AD, 97,000 Jews were captured and sold as slaves and just dispersed to the four winds in the Roman Empire, slaves. So we studied Corinth recently, and you may remember, this is months ago, so just act like you remember it. We mentioned how the Romans came in and wiped out Corinth in 146 BC and then repopulated it. You know what they did with the Corinthians in 146 BC? They killed all the men. What do you think they did with the women and children? Sold them into slavery. Go to Revelation 18. We looked at this the other day. Revelation 18, this is the judgment against the harlot. Like, this is a depiction of Rome. Rome matches this depiction in every way in Revelation 17 and 18. And what's being depicted here with the fall of this harlot, who's called Babylon, symbolic, is her whole empire has been disrupted and brought low, including her economic ventures. So, Olivia, can you read Revelation 18, verse 11? And then stop.
And the merchants of the earth will weep and mourn over her, for no one buys their merchandise anymore.
So, Roman Empire really greased the wheels of commercial activity. They were moving so many goods around, including these goods. Read verse 13.
And cinnamon and incense, fragrant oil and frankincense, wine and oil, fine flour and wheat, cattle and sheep, horses and chariots, and bodies and souls of men.
Cattle, sheep, and men. Slaves. Understand that the slave trade was big business in the Roman Empire. Big business. It lets up a little bit by the second and third centuries, but it was big business. And it's part of the war machine. And a lot of people profited from it. So, point I made there, big business for commanders and the government. Okay, any questions about that? How Rome expanded slavery in its heyday, the late Republic and through the Empire period. See, late Republic and through the mid part of the Empire period, you know, second, third century. Okay. Now, how many slaves were in Rome and in the Roman Empire? It's hard to know. The numbers are all over the board. You'll see references by certain writers about certain cities. Sometimes you'll see them reference that it was about half and half, half slave, half free. Some places you'll have a writer who will reference that about one-third of the population or one-fourth of the population was enslaved. And sometimes a writer will write how that in a population about one-third was free and two-thirds were slave. So you're looking at large percentages. We're not looking at 5, 10, 20%. You're looking at, you know, more than a quarter percent, probably at least in every, just about every community. There were so many slaves in Rome that at one point, to try to distinguish who was free and who was slave, the Senate considered legislation to require all slaves to wear a certain kind of garment with a mark on it. And they decided against that policy because they were afraid that all the slaves would see how many slaves there were and there would be an uprising. So they feared that. Slave uprisings are not common, never have been in any society. They've been pretty rare, but when they do happen, they're pretty nasty. You probably have heard about the most famous one in Roman history, Spartacus. So he led an uprising, and it was really not to get their freedom and write a constitution. It was to get free and to fight the Romans, and he actually formed an army, like 100,000 men, and they were not all slaves. And we don't know what happened to Spartacus, but about 6,000 of them were captured and crucified and spread out on the road leading into Rome. And this was around 73 BC, so about 70-some years before the birth of Jesus. Things begin to change around the first century with slavery in the Romans. Very slow. And it had to do with Augustus's reforms. You know, Octavian, who became known as Augustus, implemented a lot of reforms. And they actually began to implement laws that regulated the trade of slaves, regulated how slaves were treated, protected. So by the time you're getting into the first century, the Romans are becoming a little bit more enlightened, I guess you could say. They're putting the system, you know, within the control of the government, and they're trying to limit some of that. One of the reasons why this happens is because the big conquests of Rome have already happened. Rome will extend itself up into what we know as Great Britain after the time of Jesus. But the really big wars of conquest have already happened. So think about that. If the big wars of conquest have passed, what's happened to the slave supply? It's dried up. So guess what happened to the price of slaves? They went up. So you want to take better care of your slaves. So what do? You pass laws to protect them. See what's happening there? It's all driven by economics, not like human rights or something like that. It's very interesting. If you've got that many slaves, you're going to have a diverse workforce, right? They're working in fields or working in mines. Those are two places you didn't. The number one place you never want to work as a slave is a mine. That's the worst thing. Any society, any culture. You usually went in, you didn't come back out. They did field work, but they also are artisans, teachers, doctors, business agents, actually negotiating trade deals, bookkeepers. A lot of entertainers and a lot of actors were slaves in the Roman Empire. A lot of them. The government owned a lot of slaves. The actual Roman government owned slaves. Of course, guess where they got them? The war conquest. And then once they got a good population of them, they kept reproducing. They used them for public works. You've heard about the aqueducts and the other great works, you know, water supply and sewer systems of the Romans. They worked as clerks in the government, and they worked in the fire brigade. Think about that. That's pretty trustworthy positions, right? And that tells us something. We'll get to that when we talk about emancipation in a moment. And you probably know about the gladiators. There were some gladiators that were free men who were out to make a name for themselves. They wanted, well, to show how tough they were. There were some who were prisoners who were told you can get out of prison if you go fight in, you know, as a gladiator. Most gladiators were slaves. And so you have a real strong, strapping man, and you say, hey, how would you like to have the best of food? How would you like to be famous? How would you like to have glory? And about all the women you want. Would you like that? Of course, the small print said you're only going to live about a month. But that's what happened. Who would go into these arenas and fight each other to the death? Unless you had nothing else to lose, right? And fight lions and tigers and elephants and rhinos and everything else. And fight in teams and groups and with swords and tridents and clubs. And it was brutal. It was terrible. You know, it's like the most violent video games and movies, except it was really happening. And the people just loved it. And the gladiators were famous. They were famous. The little children would pretend to be a gladiator. It's like they do Batman or Superman. And people had their favorites and they'd root for them. Just like, you know, I root for the Braves or the Seahawks or whatever in sports teams, a person says. And so it was just a system that was part of this Roman slave system. And the slavery kept it going. Spartacus was a gladiator and he didn't want to do it. That's why he rebelled. Okay. All right. See, I want you to... Here's what I want. We're not doing some of the things we typically do. I want you, we'll do it next week. We get into a lot of scriptures. And I want you to think about, this is the world the gospel is encountering. This is that world. This is so Corinth. Everything you're hearing here. And we have to understand how it lines up with what's happening. So what about emancipation of slaves? By the way, did you know the emancipation has a Latin base? It's from a Latin term. Means basically to turn hand, something like that. So why would somebody free a slave? This is true of the Romans, but also true of other societies, but especially true of the Romans. Sometimes financial necessity. They're expensive. You got to feed them and clothe them and provide shelter. And so if you're having to sort of liquidate some slaves and sell some, there might be some that's not going to bring much. Or maybe there's a slave who's been really faithful to you. And so you may just free him or her. But it's financial necessity that's prompting that because you don't want to provide for them anymore. Slaves would be occasionally allowed to earn extra money. See, this is why it's so strange compared to the American system with slavery in the South. It was not uncommon for slaves to hire out and sometimes be allowed to keep some of the money from some of the extra work that they would do. And here's what would happen. People are smart. And these masters realize, you know, if I let them earn a little money on the side, they're going to be happier. They're going to be more cooperative. And even if I, you know, dangle in front of them, hey, you may get your freedom one day, and that day may be 20 years down the road, I'm going to get more work out of them in that 20 years than if I don't dangle freedom and I keep them for 40 years. They knew that this was a great motivator, that you could possibly be free one day. So, well, I'll let you go out and earn a little extra money. You can save that money. Sometimes it was just the goodwill of the master. He liked a slave, or a slave was good to them or something like that as a reward. Sometimes it was a deathbed gesture. There were, you know, powerful people like to do good works because it makes them feel good. That's why wealthy people give away money and things like that. So sometimes a master would free a slave or a lot of free slaves as a gesture of goodwill as he went into eternity. You know, do something kind for the slaves. Understand that in the Roman period, this could happen if you were a slave. Did most slaves get their freedom? Probably not. Did a lot of slaves get freed? Yep. The possibility of getting your freedom in the American system in the South was almost nil. Very rare. But this was a real thing, and it was part of the whole operation. if the slaves knew that they could work toward or be granted freedom, it kept things working better and more smoothly. And so that's why we have this concept, which was a very real concept to them, called redemption. Redemption meant that you bought someone out of their slavery and you freed them. And so when you understand the extensiveness and the weight of slavery, and then you encounter that term redemption, then it means something. Okay, we'll pick up right here next time. We're going to dive into sorting out how Christianity interacts with slavery.